is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Dr. Gregory Pinto, Bahamian urologist, and I'm here as the host of The Urologist Speaks. Unfortunately, literally 10 minutes ago, my co-host, Dr. Wesley Francis, had to run off for another surgical emergency. Again, that's the life of a surgeon. You never know. You can't plan anything. That's why we have such wonderful families, our children, our wives. They know that we might have planned months in advance to go out to a special dinner or go out to the movies, and that unfortunately, you have to sometimes disappoint your family and run off and have to save somebody's life. That's the call that we've taken, but it's not an easy one. And the most important thing that we salute the ones who support us, because it's not an easy life for them as well. So I was prompted today to change the topic of the show today by events in my private practice in the last 3 days. So in the last 3 days, in this little island, in this archipelago of beautiful islands called the Bahamas, I literally diagnosed 8 men with advanced forms of prostate cancer in 3 days, including today. That's Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And I'm not in my office the entire day for those Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. I'm actually operating as well. So this problem is getting out of hand. I mean, I've been heralding the call for many, many years that prostate cancer is killing us in our prime. It's eroding the fabric of our society. It's taking away men in their prime, men who are loved by those around them, loved by their wives, their girlfriends, their children, their grandchildren, their neighbors, their church colleagues, their colleagues at work. And we all know someone who's died of prostate cancer. We all know many people who have died of prostate cancer. But the tragedy of it all is that prostate cancer doesn't have to kill anyone. Obviously, there's no certainty in life. You can't say that even if we did the most rigorous screening possible with all the tools available in our armament of picking up prostate cancer early, they're not going to be a few cases where genetically some people just get dealt a bad deck, where genetically they're just predisposed to get a very advanced, aggressive form of prostate cancer, even very early in life. And unfortunately for those, they may fall through the cracks. They may go for their annual screenings, maybe because we recognize they're at high risk. We're even screening them every 6 months instead of annually. You might even start screening at the age of 35 instead of the age of 40. But there are those, and it's not very common. I can count that on my hand in my career, the number of men that actually went to screening and that were diagnosed with advanced forms of prostate cancer, where we've cured individuals and they've come back with recurrence to our bewilderment. So in the last 15 years, a lot has been done in terms of the advances of prostate cancer treatment, even in terms of for advanced metastatic disease for palliative care. So we've been able to have a lot of new drug regimes, immunotherapy being one of them, that allow many men that would have died 15, 20 years ago, within 2 years, possibly live another 15 years, another 18 years, another 20 years. So there are miracle drugs out there, but we don't want to have to rely on those miracle drugs to try to get you as many years of quality life through palliative care because of advanced or metastatic prostate cancer. We want to pick up prostate cancer early because the cure is nearly 100%. And I keep saying this, and I'll never stop saying this, that there are very few cancers on this earth that you can say that you can cure with almost 100% certainty. And prostate cancer, unfortunately, is the most common cancer in this country. As many as 1 in 6 to 1 in 7 men are going to be afflicted with prostate cancer in their lifetime. Particularly, it hits us as a nation harder than most other nations because we're primarily of African ancestry. That's the second most important risk factor for getting prostate cancer. The most important risk factor is age. So it's a disease of advancing age. Being of African ancestry puts us at the forefront in terms of being at higher risk. When we're of African ancestry, we also, unfortunately, are often afflicted on average 7 years before our other racial counterparts. And even when we have the same disease staging on in terms of screening, in terms of blood tests, in terms of tissue pathology, unfortunately, the men of African ancestry don't fare as well, and they have a higher rate of recurrence. But a lot of wonderful things are being done in terms of trying to stratify those individuals who are at particularly high risk. Even those who we can pick up prostate cancer early and give a wonderful cure to that individual, we want to know which of these persons are likely to have a recurrence. And what we do is we do gene testing of actual the prostate biopsy tissue itself, or actually if we're removing the prostate itself, we'll send off for gene testing. And that will determine, are there specific genes in that prostate cancer tissue that will tell us with statistical probability what is the likelihood of someone getting a recurrence of prostate cancer in 5 years? What is the recurrence of that individual getting it a recurrence in 10 years, in 15 years, in 20 years? So some persons are very lucky. They'll say, okay, the likelihood of recurrence might be 0.3%. Not zero, but close to zero. And then there are those who are, unfortunately, because of the genetic makeup and because of the gene testing we do on their prostate cancer, either biopsies or actually specimen, might have a 30% chance of getting a recurrence in 10 years. So those are the persons that we watch exceedingly carefully. We might even offer them adjuvant therapy where we'll give them what we call androgen deprivation to starve any possible microscopic prostate cancer cells from ever collecting and becoming a disease entity. So there are things that we can do, but why are so many men, when we have NHI, when you can get your annual bloods every single year, why are over 100 men, and that's over 100 men every single year? Some years it might be 120, it might be 128, it might be 130. Every single year are dying of prostate cancer. Dying of prostate cancer. And that death is not a pleasant death. It's not an instant death. It's a long suffering death where you lose your dignity. You're in and out of hospital. You're in emergency room with extreme pain. 3 o'clock in the morning, you're stressing out your family. You're losing weight. Sometimes you become paraplegic because the metastatic disease is actually gone in and enveloped and encroached upon the nerves in your spine or cause spinal compression. You may die actually not directly from prostate cancer, but you might die from kidney failure. So it's not a pleasant death. You can get brain metastasis, liver metastasis, lung metastasis, bone metastasis. It can be a torture just to walk. You can lose power in both your legs. So why would you want to put yourself through that? Why would you want your family to have to go through that when we have so many ways of picking up prostate cancer very early, simply with a blood test? That blood test is abnormal. There are many reasons why that blood test, which everybody's heard is a prostate-specific antigen blood test, can be abnormal. PSA is not specific or sensitive for prostate cancer alone. There are many things that can cause it to be elevated. And that's where we have to have a greater understanding. If you have infection of your prostate, it's going to be elevated. If you have inflammation of your prostate, it's going to be somewhat elevated. If you have a very big, enormous prostate, which is completely benign, it also will be above normal in range. If you have incomplete bladder emptying, which also usually goes hand in hand with an enormous prostate, that can also cause your PSA. Sometimes if you're in retention for more than a day, your PSA can shoot up to in their 20s when a normal PSA should be less than 4. In fact, it's age specific. So the average normal age for a 40-year-old is a lot less than for a 65-year-old. But the take-home message is that prostate cancer is going to afflict a large percentage of our populace. And if we don't change the course we're going, we're going to continue to have men dying in their prime. And I'm talking about men 55, 65, 70-year-olds who have their whole life potentially to live and have a wonderful retirement and enjoy the grandchildren, see the grandchildren graduate from college, see the grandchildren have children, enjoy those golden years, travel the world with your wife, pick up a new habit of maybe pick up cooking or whatever, but enjoy life to its fullest. If we only have one life, live it as long as we can and the best that we can. And that means not just physically, but spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and in every aspect. So prostate cancer is one of the most common cancers in the Bahamas. And sadly, it's one of the deadliest. But why is this happening? Doctors and science are learning that part of the answer lies in our genes. And what are genes? Genes are the special instructions we inherit from our parents. So new research is helping us understand how these genes affect prostate cancer and what we can do about it. So let's talk about genetic inheritance in regards to prostate cancer. Genetic inheritance is the way the traits are passed from parents to children. Just like you might get your mother's eyes, or you might get your father's nose, or you can also inherit things that you cannot see, like your risk for certain diseases. So these risks come from our DNA, which acts like a small set of instructions about basically how your body works. Sometimes these instructions have small changes, abnormal changes called mutations, which can raise your chance of getting these illnesses like cancer. Some people are born with these mutations, others might be developing them later in life through environmental factors such as smoking, such as excess alcohol intake. Genes and prostate cancer. So a large international study looked at genes of men with prostate cancer, and they found that some cancers grow slowly, while others become dangerous very quickly. One big reason behind the difference is basically the genes that a person has. So in men of African ancestry, and that's what we're primarily, our populace is made of, and so we'll look at Bahamian men. Scientists found that certain changes that may make prostate cancer more aggressive. So these changes were not seen as often in men of Caucasian ancestry or European ancestry. So this helps explain one of the reasons why black men are more likely to develop serious forms of prostate cancer when we look at other racial counterparts. So not all cancers there are the same. Not all prostate cancers are all the same. It was once believed that prostate cancer starts small and then it slowly grows over time, but scientists now think something different. They believe that both grow slowly, and aggressive cancers may start from the same type of abnormal cell, but different gene changes cause them to grow in different ways. So this means that some cancers are very dangerous from the beginning, and we need to pick up those cancers, and that's where we can look at the genes of the person in part of our screening for those who are high risk, and we look at the genes, mutations of actual tissue biopsies from the prostate itself. So let's summarize. What makes Bahamian men at greater risk? So studies have shown that black men, including Bahamians, are more likely to have gene mutations, as I just mentioned, and in genes that help control tumor suppression. So they're actually genes that stop us from developing cancers, that prevent us from developing mutations that allow aberrant growth of cells. So it basically corrects itself. So we can actually have genes that suppress the tumor, and these genes usually stop cancer from growing. You have an immune innate response within the body, that how your body fights the disease and cancer. You actually have innate DNA repair that fixes damage inside the cells that prevent the proliferation and progression of prostate cancer. But when these genes don't work properly, prostate cancer can grow faster and become harder to treat. So we talk about the PSA. The PSA is not a perfect test. But it's a simple and relatively inexpensive screening tool and blood test that can help find prostate cancer early. But new research has shown that PSA levels might mean different things for different individuals, and that, as I just mentioned. So when, in one large study that came out recently, black men with the same PSA level as white men had a higher risk of dying from prostate cancer. So that means there is no quote-unquote normal levels. So we can't say the normal for one person for a PSA is the same as a level for another individual, particularly if they're of a different ancestry or a different race. So for Bahamian men, this becomes very important. It means that starting PSA testing should even start even earlier. We need to start at least at the age of 40. If you have any strong predilection to prostate cancer, such as having at least one first-degree relative who had prostate cancer diagnosed at an age less than 50, then we need to start testing you at age 35. And probably we need to start testing you every 6 months after the age of 35. Then we talk about the term epigenetics, more than just the genes. So but besides gene changes, scientists are also looking at the epigenetics, so how our environment, our diet, and stress and lifestyle affect the way our genes work. So these changes don't rewrite your DNA, but they can turn genes on or off. For example, genes that protect you from cancer might get switched off without any changes to the DNA itself. So in black men, some of these switches may make the cancer more aggressive. That's why it's not just your DNA that matters, but also how your body uses it. So what does this mean for Bahamian men? This new research shows that prostate cancer is not one size fits all. It's very individualized. It's very individualized in terms of screening. It's very individualized in terms of treatment management. It's very individualized in terms of surveillance, even after successful treatment. Your genes and how your body uses them can make a very big difference. For Bahamian men, this means knowing your family history. Unfortunately, that can't be always straightforward because a lot of men don't know their fathers and sometimes even their mothers or their history. But we got to change that for so many other reasons, including this one. So if close relatives have prostate cancer, you're at high risk. Getting screened, talk to your doc about PSA testing at the age of 40, that is automatic. You don't need to ask your general practitioner. You don't need to ask your family practitioner or your internist or urologist or any other specialist doing annual bloods, please check my PSA. If you're age 40, they're automatically going to do it. If you're under the NHI plan, which everyone should sign up for, if they don't have insurance, it's an automatic. If you do have insurance, it's automatically paid for free. So understanding your risk, genes can't be changed, but knowing your risk can help you act early. Improving your lifestyle. Many months ago, I sat here with Dr. Wesley Francis, and we spoke exhaustively about the risk of alcohol, even moderate alcohol intake, in terms of increasing the risk of many cancers, including prostate cancer. So drink sparingly or not at all. Make sure that you have a normal body mass index. Make sure that you get exercise regime in your daily routine. Make sure that, and men are going to like to hear that you have at least 20 ejaculations a month. Studies have shown that statistically your chance of prostate cancer can be reduced by as much as 25 to 30% if you have more than 21 ejaculations every month. So just in layman's terms, basically, if you have a buildup of semen, a buildup of the ejaculate and all the fluids, when you have a breakdown of many chemicals that we're exposed to that go throughout the body, things that we ingest, things from the environment, there are many potential carcinogens. There are many harmful substances that if they are left to just lay around in stasis in your seminal fluid, in your prostate gland itself, that can lead to a start of prostate cancer. So essentially, you need, as a plumber will say, you need to clear the pipes. You want to keep the pipes healthy, you need to clear the pipes. And that's self-explanatory without getting into the details. So looking ahead, the good news is that doctors are learning more and more every day. Scientists are learning more and more every day about prostate cancer. So what we thought and we knew about prostate cancer 10 years ago is vastly different than what we know now. So we're getting better understanding as time goes on, and there are wonderful trials going on looking at prostate cancer screening, looking at prostate cancer treatment, even for curative as well as for palliative metastatic prostate cancer. So one day soon, hopefully, we'll be able to use genetic testing to give men a personal risk score and guide their treatment based on their unique DNA. And that's not far away. Hopefully, in the next 5 to 10 years, we're gonna get to that point. So that's wonderful, positive news on the horizon. All right, so we're talking about the all-important prostate cancer. We'll talk more on the other end of the break.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Guardian Media Group and Going Places Travel want to take you and three others on a 7-day cruise to Panama, Colombia, Curacao, and Aruba on Royal Caribbean Serenade of the Seas. And here's the best part, no visa required. That's right, no visa required. You have 4 ways to enter, 4 ways to win. 1, fill out the form in the Nassau Guardian. 2, listen to Star 106.5 and Guardian Radio 96.9. 3, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. 4, or make a purchase at Going Places Travel. Entry deadline is June 27, 2025. So pack your bags, get ready to soak up the sun, and feel that ocean breeze. You and 3 loved ones sailing the high seas on a vacation cruise of a lifetime. Drawing is on July 4, 2025. Brought to you by the Nassau Guardian Media Group and Going Places Travel. Certain conditions apply. Airfare, taxes, and gratuities not included.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks with Dr. Gregory Pinto, Bahamian urologist. I'm alone in the studio. Unfortunately, my co-host, Dr. Wesley Francis, had to be called off for another surgical emergency. So we're talking all urological health topics. Most importantly, we're talking about prostate cancer. We'll talk about benign prostate disease as well. I'm also going to talk about the all-important topic of vasectomies, and I hope men are not cringing when they hear about that. I have some good news when we talk about vasectomies. So this is an interactive show. Please don't be afraid. There are too many men who are suffering needlessly with things that are so easily treated. I can't speak enough of the tragedy of men having to drive around with a cup to urinate into because they can't even have enough time to pull over to the side of the road. And that includes men of all ages, all occupations. We're talking about police officers, defense officers, teachers, BPL workers, etc., taxi drivers. It's a horrible ordeal. I mean, keep your dignity. You don't need to do that. We can allow you to hold your urine. We can allow you to have a good flow. We can allow you to urinate and empty your bladder completely every 3 to 4 hours and have a good night's sleep. That's also important. You can't be waking up more than twice in the night to urinate. In fact, let's even aim for one time. But this isn't happening one day. You can see the slow change. Please seek a consult of a urologist if you see that you're not emptying your bladder. The bladder is essentially controlling your life. And that goes for women as well. Women, you shouldn't be on the panty liners. You shouldn't be on the pads. There are too many men and women in their prime who are walking with adult diapers because they're going to go on a 3-hour flight and they just can't take the embarrassment of making a mad dash in the plane every 20 minutes to urinate. And if they don't make it, they're going to wet themselves, and then they're going to feel in a confined space of a plane sitting next to a stranger that they're going to be smelling like urine. That's no way to live. It's no way to live where you're afraid to have a glass of water because you know that if you drink something outside of your house, you're going to be running to pee in 5 minutes. It's no way to live where you stop drinking at 5 p.m. because if you drink anything, you're going to be peeing all night. That's going to cause hazard to your health in so many ways. Even from a urologist, you're going to start making the all horrific kidney stones. So please stop trying to create behavioral modifications. Start trying to make the abnormal normal by sleeping with a bucket at the side of the bed because you got to urinate so frequently. Stop driving with a makeshift container so that you can place your male member in it and be able to urinate and then collect the urine and then dump it when you get home. Stop wearing the padding if you're a male, or the panty liner or pad as a female, because you know you're not going to make it to the toilet, or you might have some form of urinary incontinence, whether it's urge urinary incontinence where you don't make it to the toilet in time, or stress urinary incontinence where every time you exert any effort, you cough, you sneeze, you lift anything heavy, you lift your grandchild, you laugh at a joke, you're going to leak urine. So that's no way to live. You wanna, as I keep saying, I'm here to impart knowledge. Knowledge is key. The health of the nation is the wealth of the nation. Let's make ourselves a stronger nation, a better nation, a healthier nation, a happier nation. No one can be happy if the bladder is controlling their life. No one can be happy if they're waking up all hours of the night to urinate. No one can be happy if they're scared to know where's the next bathroom, or live their life or their daily routine based on where's the next bathroom and feeling embarrassed that they're running to the bathroom all the time and they know they're not emptying the bladder. And it's not just a nuisance. I keep also imparting this information. If you're not emptying your bladder, you can do irreversible damage to your bladder itself. But the bladder can lose its sensation. You're going to have poor bladder filling sensation. It could also lead to poor motor activity where your bladder is not going to be able to function, to contract fully, to empty completely. So it's not just a nuisance. It's not something that you need to hide and suffer in silence. If anything health-wise is going wrong, please seek the consult of a physician in a confidential manner, and they're going to give you confidential, comprehensive, compassionate care. And there are also those things that you don't see where it doesn't affect you until it's too late, whether it's diabetes, whether it's hypertension, whether it's atherosclerosis or high cholesterol. That's why you have to go to your annual physicals every year. You must. And you can't skip 2 years here, 3 years here. In those intervening years, those are the years where something catastrophic can happen, where if we had picked it up early, or even if we saw the trend happening, if we saw that you on investigations of blood investigations that you're pre-diabetic, we can turn the tide. We can change the tide from you becoming a diabetic. So please, even if you haven't seen your physician in 10 years, it's never too late. Please do not suffer needlessly. So I'm going to talk about benign disease. When men talk about prostate, first of all, they don't even know what a prostate is. A prostate is a walnut-sized organ that lies underneath the bladder above the rectum. It's only royal and it's only present in men. I won't take it for granted that people understand that. But its only role is to basically facilitate and aid in the fertilization of the egg, of the ovum, by the sperm. So it provides nutrients for the sperm. It provides a prime environment for the sperm to swim and reach the egg itself to fertilize it. It also, in terms of pH and environment, it also contributes to providing environment for the sperm to fertilize the egg. So beyond fertility, it has absolutely no role whatsoever. But it's the organ where men of African ancestry are going to be afflicted the hardest, with the most aggressive form of disease, and it's the number one cancer in this country. Then we look at the counter, it's benign disease. Every man in this country is going to be afflicted in some way or other with benign enlargement of the prostate. It's an inevitable part of getting older, and I keep mentioning this. and too many men suffer needlessly because of it. We go by decades, approximately 50% of 50-year-olds, 60% of 60-year-olds, and probably 80% of 70-year-olds, 70 to 80% of 7-year-olds have some what we call obstructive or irritative lower urinary tract symptoms where they're not emptying the bladder or they have urgency, or always have to know where the next bathroom is, or they're peeing every hour, every 45 minutes, or waking up 5, 6, 8 times in the night, walking around like a zombie all the time. They might have urinary hesitancy. They go to rush to pee and they're waiting there 45 seconds to even initiate a stream. Or worse yet, they're performing what we call a Cordae maneuver. They're applying manual pressure to their actual full bladder to try to squeeze out the urine because the motor function has been impaired because they haven't been emptying the bladder for so many years. So let's not go to that nth degree where we've already developed end-stage irreversible damage to your bladder. And not only that, if the kidneys are removing the toxins from our body, and the urine is draining from our kidneys down the tubes, which are called ureters, bilaterally on both sides into the bladder. If your bladder is always full of urine, there's nowhere for those kidneys to drain that urine. And that urine is going to back pressure in a medical term called hydronephrosis, and that can lead to acute kidney injury. If it's lasting long enough, it can lead to chronic renal failure. It can lead to bacteremia, where the stasis of urine, your kidneys, can lead to bacteria. You can actually literally have urinoma where the kidney is so expanded under such great back pressure because there's nowhere for the urine to drain because the bladder is already full, that the urine can actually break off into the cavity surrounding it and even eventually lead to into the bloodstream itself. So please don't go to that stage. That's something that we can never completely reverse, and we don't want you to have to ever go through that. So the most common thing that any urologist in the world will see by far, and that's BPH, because every man, half the world are men. If you live to your middle age, even from 40, some men start even at age 35, particularly black men, they're going to have issues with emptying their bladder because of an enlarged prostate. So even if you're 55 years old and you're not emptying your bladder, statistically speaking, it's related to an enlargement of your prostate. And furthermore, statistically speaking, it's more likely to be benign disease than prostate cancer. So far too many men will suffer needlessly. They know they're not emptying the bladder. They know they haven't been emptying the bladder for years. They know it's affecting their health. They're affecting their quality of life. But they're afraid because they think that all of these symptoms are related to prostate cancer. Statistically speaking, it's a much greater probability that it's related to benign disease, which we can easily put you on medication. In most cases, that'll get you peeing like a 15-year-old again. But even if it is prostate cancer, if we can pick it up early, we can cure it very easily, you know, one-day procedure. Some of them are even outpatient, and that allows you to not have to go through that horrible ordeal that prevent you from your family going through that horrible ordeal of having metastatic advanced prostate cancer. So there are many ways of treating prostate cancer. That's another advantage of prostate cancer. Unlike colon cancer or breast cancer, many of these cancers, we have to treat them locally and we need to treat them systemically. So even for relatively early forms of breast cancer, you still need to get chemotherapy because locally we can get control, but they're always going to be what we call micrometastasis, where those little cancer cells that have spread throughout the body, throughout the bloodstream, that's where you need to have chemotherapy. But for prostate cancer, that is not correct. Prostate cancer, if it's organ-confined disease, if it's early stage pathologically, we can offer you curative treatments, and I'm going to mention the main curative treatments, without any chemotherapy whatsoever. In fact, chemotherapy involved in prostate cancer management is for advanced disease. It's for palliative measures. So those who are afraid of getting chemotherapy, I don't want to get diagnosed with prostate cancer. I just don't want to know. I'd rather live in ignorance. Or I saw my granduncle die of colon cancer, and the chemotherapy was so horrible. His quality of life was terrible. He lost all his hair. He was losing all his weight. He couldn't eat. He was vomiting all the time. He felt sick. He was skin and bones. Chemotherapy, let that be a motivation. Chemotherapy has no role in curative treatment for early prostate cancer. So let's pick it up early, where we can offer you a removal of the prostate, which is called a radical prostatectomy. That can be done open with a little bigger incision. That can be done minimally invasively, either laparoscopically with little keel incisions, the camera being entered into the abdomen and the pelvis, and we can do a nerve-sparing dissection, let your nerves remain intact, allow your erections hopefully to be the same before and after the removal of your prostate. Or we can offer it using a Da Vinci robot, again, using small little keyhole incisions. So the advantage of minimally invasive removal of your prostate is basically you have minimal to no pain. You're up in about hour and a half to 2 hours after the procedure. You'll go home the next day, and you're basically pain-free. So there's no long recovery. You're not laying in bed when you go home. You're up and about. You'll be in the food store. No one will even know that you had anything done. You'll be back to work very, very quickly. So that's another advantage of being of prostate cancer being picked up early, is that we can offer very minimal invasive procedures that you can do on your weekend and go back to work and no one even knows you had it. We can place brachytherapy seeds. That's internal radiation. So we strategically, with a planning, schematic planning, doing imaging, MRI, and 3D reconstruction of the prostate, knowing exactly where the prostate cancer cells are, we strategically place small radioactive seeds that disperse very low doses of radiation in a few millimeters in either direction that kill only the prostate cancer cells, leaves the rest of the gland intact. That's a wonderful cure modality as well. We can heat the prostate cancer. So we can offer what we call HIFU, high-intensity focus ultrasound, that kills only the prostate cancer cells that leaves the rest of the gland intact. We can offer cryotherapy, which can be done throughout the entire prostate, or we can do it focally, leaving the rest of the gland intact. That's just basically freezing and destroying the prostate cancer cells in layman's terms and having an excellent cure rate as well. Sometimes when you have moderate risk prostate cancer, you also need to have 18 months of what we call androgen deprivation. So testosterone doesn't cause prostate cancer to develop, but once you have prostate cancer, you need testosterone to have that prostate cancer proliferate and progress. So basically testosterone is a fuel, the food that allows prostate cancer to progress. So to reduce the chance of recurrence, sometimes we'll offer somebody androgen deprivation for 18 months, sometimes 2 years. That's on a case-by-case basis. But for the most part, if you have early disease, prostate cancer can be cured in a weekend or even in a day, or in the case of brachytherapy, in a 40-minute outpatient procedure with not a single cut, without a single stitch, with no pain and no recovery. So prostate cancer is very easily picked up early. In fact, we can pick it up so early where the disease is basically indolent, where it's of no harm to that person, where we can watch that person very carefully for maybe 8, 10, 12 years before we need to cure you. So prostate cancer, not only should we be picking it up early instead of the late stage there we're seeing so much in the Bahamas, we should be picking it up so early that we can watch patients with active surveillance, because there's no need to cure you because the disease is so small volume, so risk, that it's of no consequence if we can just watch you. And I have dozens and dozens of patients who are doing extremely well with active surveillance for a low volume, low risk prostate cancer. And we're watching them for many years, and hopefully we'll be able to watch the vast majority of them for many more. And for some of them, they'll actually die of old age before we even need to cure you. Another important pearl in regards to understanding prostate cancer treatment: if you're unlikely to live 10 years for whatever reason, because of your age, because of other comorbidities, maybe you're bedridden from a stroke, or maybe you have another cancer, maybe you have metastatic breast, men can get breast cancer, or brain cancer, lung cancer, or whatever, that is showing that it's unlikely. Of course, we're not God. We don't know who's going to live, but we look at a performance status and what is the likelihood of you living 10 years. In most cases, we can do what we call watchful waiting, that because most prostate cancers are very slow growing. It's unlikely to be the cause of your death within the next 10 years if you're not likely to live 10 years. So that's why one of the things that we look at in terms of treating someone with prostate cancer is someone likely to live 10 years or not. For the vast majority of them, if they're not likely to live 10 years, many of them will hold off on treatment until you may develop symptoms. And that's called watchful waiting, which is different from active surveillance. Active surveillance, we picked up early disease that's indolent to the patient that's being diagnosed, where we're actively watching you so that we can actively determine when is the opportune time to pull the trigger and offer you curative treatment. Watchful waiting, we're just waiting for symptoms, and in many cases, we're just going to offer palliative care because for those symptoms, because for most of these men, these are men in their late 80s, and unless they're going to live to 95 or older, that prostate cancer is not going to be of no consequence. So if any man lives to old enough in their 80s, you're going to have some element of prostate cancer, particularly black men. So the vast majority of men die with prostate cancer, not from prostate cancer. So that's why most men in their 80s, we don't even look for prostate cancer. We're not doing PSA screenings unless that person has vivacious, full of energy, a very good performance status, likely to live 10 years or more. And the good news is that there are a lot of men who have taken care of themselves throughout the years, and they are, particularly on the Family Islands, likely to live into the 90s. So we'll treat them as if they're 60 because we expect them to live a long and fruitful life, and we don't want prostate cancer to interrupt their longevity or their quality of life. Another important topic, in fact, I spoke about this yesterday in the NASA Guardian newspaper. So I write an article in the health section of the NASA Guardian every single week for years, and I always vary the topic. It doesn't necessarily need to be regarding urology. So any topic that's pertinent to our society, even if I'm not the expert, I'm going to research it exhaustively, and I'm going to present it because I said knowledge is key. So if someone finds that something that they're dealing with, and they find some information that could change their life, and that's my motivation to spend the time. It might take me an entire Sunday to research an article, but that's my community service to my country, the community service to the Bahamian people and for the country that I love. So when we talk about vasectomies, many men cringe. We look at the economics of our society. Everyone who's a parent knows how expensive it is to raise a child, particularly when we look at private school tuition, when we look at the university and college tuition that's rising every single year. Even we look going to the food store and trying to buy healthy snacks and provide a healthy dinner for our children, it can be extremely expensive. Just talk about, as a child, diapers. Diapers are extremely expensive. Children, as they reach their growth spurt, they're going through clothes at an alarming rate. So it's very difficult for a parent to provide all the essentials for a child. So every child is a blessing from God. But when you do have the children that you plan for, it's always best to give them the best that you have and not take on the extra burden of an unplanned pregnancy. So always have that utmost confidence in your the committed relationship, whether you're married or not, with your spouse, your wife, that you don't want to be worried if the period is late. You don't want to put that burden of birth control on the woman, because unfortunately that's so much put on a woman already, and birth control has its side effects, whether it's weight gain, whether it's a risk of a deep vein thrombosis, where it's a very small risk of increased risk of cardiovascular event, it's increased risk of irritability, of depression, increased risk of putting on weight. So if we can just do a vasectomy, and vasectomy, if you read the article from yesterday, and it is online at nasaguardian.com, you look in the lifestyle section, I actually titled it Strong Man Plan Ahead. the vasectomy conversation starts here. So I gave a little illustration of a Bahamian man that I called Jason. I said that he had three children. He had a small business in Nassau. Things were going right with him and his wife. And he and his wife joked that often that their hands were full because they had two children. And if they found out that the wife was pregnant, it would change the course of all of their lives, including of the children. So it didn't mean that they didn't love the children that they have. They didn't. Doesn't mean that you don't love children in general, but just in look in terms of economics, let's give the children that we have, the children that you want. If there's everybody has their life's plan. If you only want to have two children or maybe three children, don't have five or six because of issues with birth control or because you don't want to use a condom or because birth control pills have side effects and you don't want your wife to be subject to that. Or even the tubal ligation. Tubal ligation is far more invasive and is not the 100% certainty in terms of birth control method that a vasectomy is. A vasectomy can be done on your lunch hour. A vasectomy doesn't require any cutting, doesn't require any stitches. It's done without a blade, without a surgical scalpel. It's a punctureless technique where essentially someone will come, will put a warm compress on their scrotum that makes the tubes that deliver the sperm, called the vas deferens, on both sides very prominent. So you can actually, as a surgeon, as a urologist, feel those tubes that we need to remove at least 1.5 to 2 centimeters from. And we just tie off the ends on both sides, we burn the edges, and that's you. You need at least 15 ejaculations to clear the tubes beyond where we've tied them off. And then we always send you do a sperm analysis that shows zero sperm, and then we say you're good to go. And it is reversible. There are always changes in circumstances in somebody's life where maybe they got a divorce or maybe they decided that, you know what, there's an empty nest. We're still relatively young. Let's have another child. That can be reversed, particularly in the first 2 years. Even going into up to the first 5 years, it's quite easy. Beyond that, it's a little bit more difficult. We'll probably have to send you to a super specialist that uses a microscope to reverse the vasectomies. And there are some urologists that's all they do. It's a very unique specialty, and that's all they do. So all urologists in a certain part, in a certain state, may refer all the patients to that one person because that's all they do. And they've developed a level of expertise in that. So a vasectomy is nothing to be afraid of. You're still making sperm. You're still ejaculating. It doesn't affect your sexual prowess. It doesn't affect your erections whatsoever. You still produce ejaculate fluid. You wouldn't even know that the sperm is not in it unless you go in with a microscope and look. The sperm goes harmlessly to the end of the tube, the vas deferens that's tied off. And sperm is like is a protein. So the body just harmlessly reabsorbs that protein. It does absolutely no harm to you. So essentially, it might even improve your erections because, you know what? You're not afraid of having that unwanted pregnancy, even if it's not on the forefront of your mind. For many men, it's in the background. You know, I had a hard day. I'm working two jobs. I'm at my wit's end. I'm trying to pay for the mortgage. I'm trying to save for university. I'm trying to put food on the table. I'm trying to buy a school uniform. I'm trying to pay the tuition, et cetera, BPL bill. I got to pay the cable bill. I got to make a car payment. It never ends. It never ends. And with children, they're always on. You can never predict. There are always going to be expenses that you're never going to. So you always have to have that rainy day fund as well. And if you have many kids, you can have many unexplained expenses or expenses that you never thought were going to come your way. So vasectomy is a perfect answer where men don't want to have pain. There is no pain. Men want to maintain their erections. It's going to maintain your erections. It's not going to affect your prowess. It's not going to affect the orgasm that you have in any way. And you can take your wife off the birth control pill. You can take away that risk of her getting a deep vein thrombosis or that small increased risk of having a cardiovascular event. Or you can help her not be irritable or depressed. You can also have her not have to put on 20, 25 pounds, which unfortunately a large number of women in this society unfortunately put on that weight. Many of it is because they never lose the weight after they're pregnant. A lot of it is also because they don't want to get pregnant again because of economics, and they have the children that they want. And then they're on the birth control, which exacerbates the issue. So you might put on 20, 25 pounds for baby weight, and life gets so busy, you don't have time to exercise, you don't have time to eat healthy. Then you go on the birth control pill because you know you can't afford another child, definitely can't afford another two children, that'll be disastrous. And then you put on another 20 pounds because of the birth control pill. And then before you know it, you don't recognize yourself. You have a whole new wardrobe. You have low self-esteem. You're creating cardiovascular risks for yourself. You're putting yourself at risk of diabetes and hypertension because of being overweight. It can affect your self-esteem, affect your relationship. So why put on that extra 40 pounds? When a woman has a child, please, you need to be healthy for your children. Even women are selfless in that women are the backbone of the society. It's a matriarchic society. For the vast majority, women raise the children. Women are at the forefront of every major company and occupation in the society. The vast majority of teachers are women. The vast majority of nurses are women. They're the background, the foundation of our society, and I'll salute them. And they never can get enough praise. But let's take a little bit of burden off them, men. Let's not put that birth control burden on them and cause them to have possible ill health effects. And it's easy to research this from reputable sources. Birth control pills are not 100% certain anyway. So even if at the best they're 90%, you still have that 10% chance that you can have an unwanted child. You still have that 10% worry in your head where the period is late for 2 days, the period is late for 3 days. Oh my goodness, are we going to be on the precipice of economic disaster because we're going to have another child and we don't know what we're going to do? We're already having three kids in one bedroom. We don't know how we're going to be able to afford another child. And don't have to have those thoughts in your head, please. So vasectomy is very wonderful. I've said it before, and this is controversial for a society that men don't want to use condoms, and I will never advocate that. Please, for your own safety, for the safety of women that you have in your life, for the love of your own children, for the love of your own society, and if you're in a monogamous relationship, please do the full gamut of STI testing and HIV testing and hepatitis testing, so you both know that both of you have been tested in a monogamous relationship. I'll always herald persons getting the HPV vaccine. HPV is the number one STI worldwide. We can eradicate cervical cancer because 92 to 95% of all cervical cancers are related to HPV infection. I'll say that every single week. Let's eradicate cervical cancer related to HPV vaccine, HPV by getting the vaccine. So get a vasectomy. It can change your life. It can change the life of your loved one. And you're doing it for your manhood, you're doing it, you're taking a stand, and you're doing it for your family, and you're doing it for your wife, you're doing it for your girlfriend. So all the myths and misconceptions of vasectomy are numerous, and most of them are absolutely ridiculous. Vasectomies do not increase your risk of prostate cancer. Vasectomies do not cause you to be impotent. Vasectomies do not cause you to grow breasts. Vasectomies do not affect your sexual drive. A vasectomy doesn't affect your ability to maintain or achieve an erection. So all of these things are a complete fallacies and misconceptions could be the end of us because of our thoughts can prevent us from getting the treatment that we need or the management that we need. So vasectomies are minimally invasive, no cutting, no stitches, little punctureless technique. You don't even need a suture to close that little puncture that closes on its own. You wouldn't even know that anything was done. We give you a regional block. If you want to be put to sleep, we put you to sleep. We get an anesthesiologist to review you before to make sure you're medically optimized. Many patients will, all right, what can we play for you? Siri, play whatever song that this person has requested. And we give you a little bit of sedation. You're breathing with oxygen mask. We give you a regional block that stings for a second, and then you feel nothing. And then even for the next 6 hours, you feel absolutely nothing down there. A few days afterwards, you might take an Advil or a Tylenol now and then, but you're up and about. The take-home message, you have to do 15 ejaculations after we do the procedure to make sure that the tubes are cleared beyond where we tied off the vas deferens. But once you get that clear, that means you have a life where you don't have to worry. You don't have to worry if the period's late. You know what? No worry whatsoever. It might be because of stress in your wife's life or because of a certain medication she took or whatever the case is. But you know you don't have to be biting your nails, having sleepless nights, worried, okay, maybe she's pregnant, because vasectomies are 100% certain form of birth control. So please listen to your body. That's the take-home message. If you know something's wrong, seek help. And be mindful that many things that afflict us, and we're a country overwhelmed with non-communicable diseases, whether that's hypertension, diabetes, atherosclerosis, high cholesterol, in terms of hypercholesterolemia, these non-communicable diseases have little to no side effects until they're too late. That's why the all-important annual physicals can pick them up early. And even if you see the trend that, all right, your cholesterol is a little bit creeping up. All right, you're pre-diabetic. Okay, we got to watch your pressure. You're putting on a little bit of weight. Let's get you some exercise regime. Let's watch the diet. Let's cut out the processed foods. Let's cut down the carbohydrates. That can change the path of you becoming a diabetic. That can change the path of you developing hypertension. That can change the path of you developing erectile dysfunction. So the healthier you are, the more likely you're going to maintain your excellent erections, and the more likely you're going to maintain those excellent erections going on into your golden years. And that's every man's dream, that their erections are always reliable, they're always where they want to be, and they're always good quality and no difficulty maintaining them in the retirement years. So you don't have that stress of work. You don't have the stress of coming home after a very long day. You don't have the stress of having to go into work on the weekend and trying to meet this deadline at that time. You're just trying to enjoy the time with your spouse, and you want to be sexually spontaneous, and you want to be reliable. Your health, what you do in your youth, you pay for in your older years. So do not smoke. Do not vape. Vape is just as dangerous or even more dangerous than cigarette smoking. Do not enjoy those cigars. I've seen an uptake in bladder cancers related to cigar smoking in our small society that's alarming. Cigar smoking is not benign. It's not innocuous. Inhaling or not inhaling, it can be disastrous in terms of increasing your cardiovascular risk, your risk of getting a heart attack, your risk of getting a stroke, your risk of getting lung cancer, obviously, your risk of getting your risk of getting kidney cancer, your risk of getting bladder cancer, even increase your risk of getting prostate cancer. So the list of you getting a negative impact on your health from cigar smoking or cigarette smoking or vaping is too long to mention. There's nothing beneficial. And even after you quit, you still have a slight inherent risk. Even 20 years later, after you've quit smoking, you still have a higher risk, even though it's small, than someone who never smoked. And secondhand smoke can even be even worse and have more of a negative, profound effect on your health than even firsthand smoke. So love your family, love the ones around you, love your friends, love yourself. Do not smoke, because you're going to put those around you at risk of secondhand smoke, particularly young persons. So that smoke and those carcinogens in that smoke are going to permeate your skin, are going to permeate your clothes. Even if you're smoking outside, it's going to permeate your hair follicles. You're going to go and smoke on the golf course with your friends, drink a vodka or rum and coke, and then you're going to go with all that carcinogens within your even after you bathe, after you shower, still impregnated microscopically into your skin, into your hair follicles, into your clothes, etc. And then you're going to go the next day and pick up your grandchild or your grandbaby. Please, you don't know the untold harm that exposure to these carcinogens can on a developing child. It can create DNA mutations that can put them on the path at the age of 8 months old to developing cancer at the age of 55 years old. So please love yourself, love your country, love your fellow man, love your family. Let's eat right. Let's make sensible choices. Let's combat this overwhelming obesity in this society. We're a very obese nation. So let's turn the tide and let's make this generation, and I haven't given up on this generation, let's make this generation healthier than the last generation. And what I'm seeing is the opposite trend of this. So I hope I've imparted some important information. Next week, we have a very important guest. We're going to have Speak Everything Cancer. We're going to have Dr. Devon Curling, a medical oncologist. And I'm sure and I'm hopeful that Dr. Wesley Francis will also be available, who is a surgical oncologist. So we're going to talk about everything cancer. Please call in next week. Cancer is overwhelming in this country. Everybody knows someone who's had cancer. So any question, please jot it down now, and we're going to take all calls next week. Have a very good evening, and I am very pleased to have this radio show, and thank you for all the support. Good night.